Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I'm joined by Arian Kramer. Arian is a Salesforce certified technical architect working for Salesforce in the Netherlands. We look at his career plans when he was growing up and what his earlier career looked like and the skills that he picked up then that he still uses day to day now. We look at his time spent with Capgemini in the Netherlands and why he stayed with one company for so long, how he kept learning and progressing. We then look at when he first came across the Salesforce platform, what he thought, and then when he moved into the ecosystem and the roles that he's played since. We investigate a little bit more about his CTA journey and why that was a goal of his and the kind of gaps he needed to plug along the way to be successful with the review board. We then look at the work he does with the community and why giving back to the community is so important to him, and then focus a little bit on public speaking and building up that confidence and finding out if that's something that he has always had or if that was a challenge he had to overcome. And then we look at the architect role and what makes a successful architect in his view. So really interesting episode. Arian's a great guy. I recommend you all follow him online and keep a lookout for him at future Salesforce events. And I hope you enjoy the episode. If you do, please do subscribe for future episodes that are coming through.
So Arian, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Ben. No, I'm happy to be part of this.
This is completely my pleasure. So look, I was explaining before I first came across you in Dreamforce, you were talking about your journey to CTA and what makes a great architect. And ever since then, I've been very aware of the engagement that you have with the community, both locally and globally. So I was very keen to get you on the podcast and talk a bit more about your journey.
Yeah, that was actually a nice moment. So nobody actually sent me the memo, but basically I was the only one sitting there with a shirt, right? I should have worn some swag, but basically I was sitting there with a t-shirt and the other two CTAs in that panel actually were wearing a dark blazer, right? The sports jacket. So I was like, I didn't get that memo.
Yeah.
So that's something you typically need to do, so it seems, right? At the moment you turn CTA, you need to wear dark sports jackets.
Of course.
To these types of
that's things. The that's the uniform. But you were the only Salesforce employee on stage, right? So you get away with it. You're in the position everyone's striving to be.
Well, I think the ecosystem is fun, right? Whether inside Salesforce or outside Salesforce.
Sure.
There's enough room for everyone.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I obviously want to discuss your Salesforce career, but I want to start before then and look back at kind of what your plans were when you were growing up and what you aspired to be when you were kind of going through that phase of working out what your long-term goals were.
Right, exactly. So I'll try to keep it short. So I grew up in with my parents actually owning a bakery store. And at a certain point, I decided, well, that's not for me because I need to go up very early every day, right? My dad actually introduced me into computers. So he sparked the fire, right? I think quite early, we had a Commodore 64. So started actually coding. And I like coding better than doing the games on it. And then at a certain point, I actually looked at becoming a fighter pilot, a couple of other things during the whole procedure to try and get there, right? Didn't work out. So then I actually chose electronics and then specifically a combination of telco and Informatica. And then I guess liked coding and anything software related really much. So yeah. Continued that and basically in graduating at a large multinational consulting firm, Capgemini, I actually liked it too much there and stayed. Getting the opportunity to grow myself, learn different aspects of software and anything that had to do with the information technology, right, around it. So several roles. And several industries, several technologies I've been able to really get acquainted with and learn and build expertise with.
Sure.
So that's how it started out.
Yeah, nice. So baking wasn't for you, but coding was. So yeah, absolutely. obviously, I do some research before we speak. And one thing that really did jump out to me was how long you did stay with Capgemini. And I think I think now things have changed more recently in that longevity isn't always like it's not always top of people's agenda. Right. Whereas historically, people wanted to get into a company and stay there long term. So what were the early days like in Capgemini in terms of the kind of engagements that you were working on? And how did you ensure that you kept progressing and learning, staying in the same company for so long?
Right, exactly. Well, I think one of the things that made me stay was actually the opportunities I got, right? So it's a large international organization, right? So I had the opportunity to not only work and learn in the country I was actually actively engaged. Right. So I'm from the Netherlands. So that's where I had my contract with Capgemini. It's a global organization. So I had the ability to see other countries, work with companies, with customers in other countries as well. Right. And work with colleagues around the globe. So that was one aspect that actually kept me there because it actually allowed me to grow in many aspects. I started off actually as a developer. So did Microsoft, initially Visual Basic, move to Visual Basic .NET and C#, and then eventually progressed to Java Enterprise Edition. In the same time, actually having a sidetrack where my fellow developers didn't really, well, they weren't really that fond of it. My sidetrack was actually doing customizations for primarily CRM solutions, so package-based solutions, but primarily a CRM solution. So I've been working with solutions like Clarify, later on Epiphany, and some packages specifically for notary advocacy firms or law firms. So, yeah, and I like that aspect as well, right? So standard-based packages, but doing, I don't know, customizing them where organizations need to be, I call it justifiably unique, right? So where they really need to stand out. So some stuff in CRM really it should be, I don't know, straightforward and more or less standardized, but some stuff may actually set you aside as an organization.
Sure.
So that's what I like.
Every consulting company is different, right? But to stay in a company for that long and keep progressing, did you have a strategy behind that? Like, did you think, right, I need to just keep putting my hand up for new things, or I need to be my own biggest fan and be outspoken about my skill set? Or how does someone keep progressing and getting to the next level? Because often people stagnate in a company.
Right, I get it. So to be honest, some or maybe even the majority of it was more or less coincidence. So like, for instance, I started off actually working in the CRM space. So that was really the first project that I did. But I started off more or less as a trainer or a guy that would be floor walking when implementation went live, right? But soon people realized, hey, he likes and he knows coding. So let's look at that, right? And see whether we can actually leverage his background and expertise there. And then, along the way, really stuff happened. Like, for instance, at a certain point, I was quite established as a developer in the Microsoft space, right? And then one of the leaders within the Capgemini organization said, hey, we're starting off a Java practice, and we think you would be a nice fit. And would you be interested in learning Java, developing yourself, and progressing there, right? And then at a certain point, hey, we're doing Java Enterprise Edition now. We'd like to look at solutions like BEA WebLogic and the whole other integration stack they had, for instance. And would you be actually willing to actually lead that? So, and then BEA got acquired by Oracle, and then I moved into customer experience with Oracle. And so a lot of the things were mostly on coincidence rather than me really stipulating where I wanted to go.
Sure. And I guess what we can take from that is that though you had to be open to taking on new challenges and, you know, putting your hand up and saying, yes, I'm ready, rather than just settling on one path.
Exactly. And then, so I had one, I still think that holds. There's one North Star thing that drives my career. Certain point, I think being a CTO or a chief digital officer for a multinational organization, that would be something I aspire, right? So then pretty much I did an assessment with every single new thing that came up. Hey, would this actually fit that path towards it, right? And same goes for this role, right? The program architect's role with Salesforce. That still fits with the path towards.
Yeah, absolutely.
If that makes sense.
So could you remember the first time you saw Salesforce and what you thought?
Right. Yeah. I think first encounter was when I was doing Oracle customer experience stuff for Capgemini. I was leading a joint service offering globally for Capgemini back then. So we had a joint Oracle customer experience service offering. And then I came across them in basically competing against Capgemini team members that were on the Salesforce side, right? And then obviously Oracle Open World happened and things that Salesforce had. That's where you had many encounters between Larry Ellison and Mark Benioff. So yeah, I saw that. But then from the perspective of being, I don't know, more or less connected to Oracle customer experience, seeing it as a tool that well in B2B CRM, but that was it, right? And still quite limited. That was my first view at Salesforce, right? Not something that you would apply on enterprise scale.
Sure. Yeah. So then from having that perception to now being a program architect, like what has that journey looked like? How did you make that move, or why did you make that move into the being a kind of full-time Salesforce expert?
Yeah, so at the time, there were a couple of things, right? There was some personal stuff that happened. I guess even personal stuff between me and my manager. Right. I think that was more or less the trigger. But then I started more or less looking around and assess, OK, so where I think information technology is heading, right, and especially cloud computing and how that was adopted or how it actually was also applied in the engagement that Capgemini was involved in. Right. I actually thought we needed to speed up. And I couldn't see that happening in the company like Capgemini. So at that time, well, I actually was quite lucky. I had a couple of possibilities to choose from. So I talked to a couple of organizations, right? Other system integrators, but decided, well, the grass will be another shade of brown at the other system integrator, right? So I decided not to go for that, but really do a switch and then look at, okay, what could a role as a professional services contributor at a vendor actually look like? So talk to Microsoft, talk to Oracle, I talked to Salesforce, and eventually from those, I actually chose Salesforce. And this, I think two things stood out, the technology, and the actual way the organization was led by its values. Those were the primary things that stood out tremendously.
Sure.
Opposed to the other ones. Yeah.
And I know there's been a theme when I've heard you talk, and it's around also having fun as part of your work, right?
Exactly.
So did you see in those early days that Salesforce was going to be a fun place to work?
Yeah, so I noticed already from the first moment that I was talking to the recruiter, and then how it evolved with the talks that I had with the people working within the organization, that I was going to be able to actually really work there and balance it with pleasure in work, right? So engagement with colleagues, but also the, I don't know, Salesforce has this special vibe around it, right? So even if you get into an organization and work with the people that actually are tightly connected to Salesforce because of their roles and their engagement, there's always this sense of a special pleasurey and fun aspect that you get there. And that's actually also already something that I saw when I was still doing Oracle, right? I was like, hey, well, it is quite a funny bunch, those people that work with Salesforce. Even back then, I think that was 2008, 2009 or something.
Yeah, wow.
Right? Yeah.
So you saw the opportunity, you took it with both hands, and you're now in Salesforce. What roles have you played since then working for Salesforce? Like what have your titles been and your responsibilities?
Right. So I stick to program architect. So developed in that, passing a couple of grades. But like next to the role, what I try to do is also give back from the experience I have in general as an architect, but also more specific now having, gone a bit deeper with Salesforce. As part of the onboarding, or at least the first couple of months, I was lucky to actually do a bootcamp style. We discontinued that because of reasons, but I actually had the luxury to actually go through that. But one thing that we are doing is really assign people to projects, really to learn the aspects of implementing Salesforce, right? So especially if you come in fresh with no prior or at least very little Salesforce experience in this role, you still are able to add value, but it's really relevant to actually be there in the weeds and understand the difficulties with the, I don't know, sandbox to production system, progressing chain sets and hitting limits and what have you, all those type of things. So I was lucky actually doing a project for a .org customer, right? So a nonprofit organization in the Netherlands, but a system integrator partner actually had been struggling to get them live, moving from a mainframe system to Salesforce, which was quite a shock for the organization, you can imagine. So I was part of the team actually to turn it around and brought them live in a couple of months even. So that was really fun. And that, I think that will really set me up for the rest of my stuff, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, nice. And obviously you have gone down the CTA path. You've right. achieved that. And obviously that's a massive achievement that a lot of our listeners are striving for. So what did that journey look like? And equally as important, how much of your prior experience set you up to succeed as a CTA, like prior to Salesforce? Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that without my prior architect experience and general IT experience, I joined Salesforce with, I think, 20 years of IT experience, right? So I couldn't have done the CTA in the time frame that I did it without that prior experience. And then also specifically, so I mentioned that, right? So Red Threads throughout my career have been a CRM, customizing it, right? Software development, obviously, and also integration. So that mixture and having been there in the weeds with customers and bringing software solutions alive, right? That helped tremendously in the preparation. Another aspect in that journey, right? So as a program architect within Salesforce, we actually need to do internal exams, which are scenario-based, just like the CTA review board is. We need to do 9 of those in order for us to be allowed even to go for the review board. Back when I did the CTA, actually was able to do the CTA 2 multiple choice exam, but nowadays, you actually need to do both all of the pyramid designer certifications as well as that those internal exams.
Sure.
So that helped me a lot also in the specific domains or understanding and getting experience even in the specific domains that are covered in the review board scenarios. Right?
Sure. So do you remember when you were preparing for the CTA review board where your gaps were, where you kind of didn't have the depth of knowledge or the breadth of knowledge?
Right. So sharing and visibility, definitely, right? I think that's really a beast. So when I really started doing the last couple of months ramping up for the review board, I actually did the sharing and visibility designer certification and failed that one. But what it allowed me to do, because back then we already had that overview, right? Where are your weak spots? So it allowed me to actually learn and go really deep in the areas where I was just lacking the experience, right? And going through documentation, movies, but also talking to colleagues, right? That had more experience than I did in making them explain how things were working, right? So things like territory management, stuff that is not that touched that much, but also things like communities. And one thing that community sharing, one thing that really helped as well in that journey is that meanwhile, I started being a judge for those internal exams as well. So I could leverage basically experiences in those, judging those exams, right? And learning from those every single time I was judging them too. So that helped in preparing too. Yeah, so sharing and visibility was, I think, the main one. And sure. Then, I don't know, things like a multi-org, right? So how do you go about that?
Yeah.
So one thing that was really not that difficult for me was identity and access management. But again, that's where my prior experience actually helped. As an example, yeah, you don't know them in Australia, but people from Europe might know UPC or Liberty Global. I was actually the solution architect that brought the first versions of their mobile application live, right? So in several countries. And that really helped me in understanding, okay, so how does that work, right? OAuth flows, and if you combine it with SAML, right? If people register on through social media, and how does that work? And how can you lock down access again? So that was an area that worked quite well.
Yeah.
I needed to learn a bit of those special flows, but that was it.
Sure. So I think obviously there are massive benefits of working for Salesforce for the CTA review board in terms of the process you have to go through before you get to do the review board. But even having gone through those 9 practice ones, can you prepare yourself mentally for that day and what it's going to feel like to have the stakes raised and be in the review board?
Yeah, I think that you hear that a lot, right? So it's really practicing, right? So leveraging those scenarios that are out there, right? So if you go to the Trailblazer community, this the Architect Trailblazer community group, it has 6 or 7 practice scenarios. Leverage those and work with people, either, let's say, people that are on the same journey like yourself, right? If you're preparing for the review board, there must be people out there around you, right, in your ecosystem that are on the same path. Leverage them, let them be judges and give you feedback, do a Q&A with you, right, on how well you're doing in preparing solutions for the scenario. Because that's really, it's I think part of the review board is really being prepared for these days, actually solutioning, right? That's something that you, I don't know, just need to build your own rhythm that allows you to do that type of solutioning in 3 hours. And then another element of practicing is really, if you have 45 minutes to actually present such a scenario, right? What is the level of detail that you need to present? And that's really, in German, they say Fingerspitzengefühl. You need to really be keen on getting across, I know this, right? I know this part or this domain, but balance it with, okay, still covering enough of the requirements and then balancing it with the amount of time you take to actually present it. So that's really, I don't know, a delicate part of preparing for the review board.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. I hear time management is key. And well, obviously it's key, right? Because you might know everything, but if you can't get it all in, then you're never going to pass.
Right. So that's another area where my past experience helped, right? Because I've been in, I don't know, workshops, presentations with several types of groups, right? Could be C-level, could be enterprise architecture teams, could be IT teams, right? And then you always need to be careful of the amount of time that you have available, right? And balancing the level of detail that you bring and eventually getting a result out of it, right? So that experience of just being active in IT for 20 years, that helped a lot in being able to run that in the review board.
Sure. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
This episode of Talent Hub Talk is sponsored by our friends from Flow Republic. Flow Republic is a Salesforce Architect Academy that works with individuals and businesses to upskill and prepare Salesforce architects for the CTA review board. They also have a number of other offerings, including coaching and guiding on areas such as soft skills, consulting, and design training. Flow Republic are some of the brightest minds in the Salesforce ecosystem and have a proven track record of developing Salesforce professionals and helping architects to reach their goal of becoming a CTA. To find out more about the value they can add, please check out flowrepublic.com.
And then talking about being active, you're active in the community and you know, you're involved in meetups, you've presented at Dreamforce, you're on this podcast, you know, you definitely give back to the community. Why is that so important to you?
Yeah, right. So I think 2 things. First of all, personally, I love being well, I love interacting with people, right? So I think in my Twitter profile it says networkaholic, but that's really because of the, I don't know, the interaction, but also a collaboration with people around, well, a thing like Salesforce, or specifically, for instance, getting preparing for CTA. But the other aspect is, well, I have some experience and I'd like to, well, use that for others to benefit from it, right? Because I think my past scratches and bruises, right, will help others in being a bit more successful. And if I can achieve that by just giving a couple of tools and the stuff that I learned from the past, right? That's amazing. So yeah, happy to give, do that type of giving back to the community.
Yeah, and I think it's win-win, right? I think it's great for you because it gives you, you know, being able to give back is such a great feeling as well, but it's also so valuable for the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And then what I like about specifically Salesforce then, right, if you look at how active and engaged the community is, right, and that's actually both outside of Salesforce, but also inside Salesforce, right, one of the, I don't know, add-on roles that I had in the recent past was being the community lead internally for technical architects. And one of the drivers there is really, I think where people collaborate, right? And you are able to facilitate bringing expertise that may reside in one country or in a couple of teams and bring that together. That's really lovely because really what you see then, and that's, that might be, how do you say that? Something well-known or no, how's that called? Basically, one-on-one can be more than two, right? So that's really what happens. And that's what I like with working with communities, with groups of people.
Sure. So, yeah. So to be a great architect, I think you need to be comfortable with presenting and, you know, you need a lot more than just presentation skills to be a great architect. But if you can't stand up and command a room or a discussion, then yeah. I think sometimes you may struggle. And also with the review board, you know, communication is such a key aspect. But I've seen you present and, you know, like I said before, I left that conversation or that presentation with a feeling that you are a fun guy to work with as well. But obviously, you know, you know your stuff, but you were very comfortable presenting at Dreamforce. And is that something you've always been comfortable doing? Like, or did you have to work up to that point?
Yeah, so I actually can't recall what the real first moment was, but I think in general I've been comfortable with it. One thing that actually came to mind when thinking about that aspect, right? So when I was still a small boy, I actually have been witnessing my dad presenting about a piece of software that he had been developing with a vendor to support his a bakery store, right? The operations of the bakery store. And that was in front of an audience of, I don't know, 200, 250 people, right? So, and I still remember how much in awe I was that my dad was on stage there and presenting, right? And I also loved the fact that he liked it that much, right? So I saw he was enjoying and sharing his story. So maybe that's where it all happened or started, right, with me being pretty much comfortable with I don't know, leading things, but I also seeked it, right? So so I was, for instance, part of a music group, a wind band in where I lived when I was young, and in many cases I was also the guy that actually stood up, right, doing fun stuff with the group, but also, I don't know, when stuff needed to be arranged, when we needed to move a couple of the instruments, especially the bigger instruments for the percussion section, right? I was the one arranging that and ensuring that everything was loaded, and then when we were on the location, was loaded, offloaded again, right? So I think it's a natural aspect that I've been able to grow and also apply in my job these days.
Sure. So do you get nervous now when you're presenting to C-suite, or is it kind of, does that eventually just become natural?
Well, I can tell you what a review board does, right? So if you passed it, right, then you actually think, well, I went through that, right? So that's it, right? There's nothing beyond the review board. So it even brought me a sense of calmness in the and obviously you need a bit of excitement, right? So so if you go in front of a new group of people, there's always a bit of excitement, and that's fine as well, right? So that's also something I learned along the way. That excitement needs to be there because it's going to help you in being energetic enough, right? And allow you to drive the conversation. But acknowledging that it's there, that's also good. And acknowledging that it's fine that it's there is something that will help you actually embrace it and then say, okay, well, let that not get in the way of a good performance, but actually let that help me in doing this the best way I can.
Sure.
Right? So.
Yeah, that's great. Like if you harness it in a positive way, then it helps. But some people let it kind of take over, right? And I've been in situations like that where I'm just about to do a talk in even to a small group, and like I can feel the nerves pumping through my body because you just let it take over sometimes.
Right, exactly. And then one thing I learned is actually acknowledging that in front of the group, right? So, hey, I'm a bit excited about this, right? And I first want to take a breath here, right, and acknowledge that, and then move on. That's really one of the tricks that I learned along the way. Because if that happens, right, at least they know that it is exciting and quite nerve-wracking for you, and then they also build a bit of understanding, right? End of the day, we're all humans, and luckily enough, there's a lot of empathy that you can build, that people can relate to what you are going through.
Yeah.
Right? So that's cool.
Absolutely. So I hope the panelists on the review board are as accommodating with taking people's nerves into consideration.
Well, they're really poker face, right? So you won't see any emotion there. But yeah,
that must be tough. So architecture, you're passionate about. You've had a long career in architecture, and I'm sure you've seen some good, some bad, and some indifferent architects along the way. What do you think makes an amazing architect?
Right, I think being curious, right? So continue to ask and not fill in blanks. So that's a key trait, I think, for a good architect, because there might be stuff that is hidden that people don't talk about. But eventually, after implementing a solution, you find out, oh, yeah, but that needed to be part of it, right? So continue to ask. And that might actually take the design phase or architecture phase a bit longer, right? However, that helps eventually in coming up with a good solution. I think being, I don't know, proactive, right, as an architect is another crucial thing. Don't be, sitting somewhere in the corner, because that's eventually you might be neglected by people, right? So if you are the architect, go out there and talk to people, right? Understand what they are working on, how they are thinking, and then from there, drive the conversation towards the common principles that you agreed upon, right, within the architecture that you define for a certain solution. Yeah, proactive. And I think communication, right? But that comes in really several forms. So, for instance, taking a moment to just have a conversation with someone over a cup of coffee, talking about maybe other stuff than just the solution or the project that you're working on, can open up doors and help you in improving the state of a solution just by having that conversation. So it's not only about being able to be a courageous presenter, right, or getting a solution across, that too, but communication comes in several flavors and in several forms.
Yeah. And what about managing confrontation? Is that a key aspect of an architect, do you find?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that's also part of my experience, I've been a manager, line manager for 5 years at Capgemini. Again, something that the organization allowed me to be, right? So in those 5 years, I've been managing groups from 40 to 80 people, right? And I learned a lot about different conversation types and different, sometimes you really need to bring the actual emotions that you have, right? And really surface that. So maybe it's also a bit of acting in such a way. But I learned as well that you can't really act. It needs to be genuine. So if you're angry about something, then also balance it, the way it comes out, but express at least your the feelings that you have. And same goes for if you're happy about something, really thank someone for something good that happened, or a nice solution, or a great implementation that they think, right? So balancing, I don't know, the different ways of communication and leveraging emotion in that, I think that helped me a lot, or at least to get where I am today.
Sure. Yep. So you've got to where you wanted to be in terms of architecture. What advice do you have for someone that's starting their architecture career now? So this is their first step. What would be your right. key piece of advice to someone that's going through that journey?
So first of all, don't only focus on Trailhead and Salesforce certifications, because I think there's a wealth of experience and expertise out there, right? And that goes into several areas. Think about architecture frameworks or methodologies in general. I'm actually not a religious follower of any type of methodology, but it's good to understand a bit more of the background of how you get from, okay, we have an idea, and being able to define and eventually operate along those principles as well, right? So that's one. But also think about, well, other skills that we discussed, right? Stakeholder management, communication, being able to reach the emotions you're feeling in your conversations and really, I don't know, be a bit more authentic. And that really eventually requires you to learn a couple of personal values, right? So what is important to you as a person, and what is it that is driving your work, you as a human, right? And I know that sounds fluffy, but for me, having had the opportunity to learn a bit more deeper how I am operating, right, as a person, that actually was really helpful also in being successful as an architect.
Right? Yeah, and I think that's really important, because I think a lot of people want to be an architect, but why? Like, and that driver, like, why does someone want to be a CTA? Why are they going down that path, and why is that so important to them? And often I find people can't always answer that. It's, you know, it's just what's kind right. of expected of them, or what they're expecting they need to do because they're going down this Salesforce path. So yeah, I think understanding your values and then using them to become a better architect is really important.
Absolutely. So in general, for me, right, going for the CTA, when I first joined Salesforce, first couple of weeks, there was a guy that actually led the program, CTA program, the Inside Salesforce in the US. And he actually introduced me to the CTA program. I was like, okay, I'd like to go for this. Not really understanding exactly what it meant, right? And also what the value was. But in hindsight, right? So if I look back now, what it brought me, right, in addition to all the experience that I had before, is actually I'm now, like I said, even more calm than I used to be in conversations, right? Being able to cut to the chase in a real short time frame, right? So being able to say, okay, so this is the situation we're in. This is all of the aspects, architectural aspects or solution aspects that are out there. And then coming up with a solution that makes sense in a short time frame. That was one of the things, I don't know, I didn't manage that well enough, but going through the whole journey for CTA, that's one aspect that really, I don't know, I learned and I have been able to develop. So if you're unable to reach and finalize the review board, right, the whole journey will really help you in improving your skills, your architectural skills.
Sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I really appreciate your time. I've really enjoyed the chat, and you are active on socials. So if any of our listeners or viewers want to hit you up and have a chat, where's the best place to contact you?
I think LinkedIn would be the place. But one ask there, please, if you reach out, LinkedIn, especially the web version, right, has this opportunity to add a note. Please add it, right? Don't just send me an invite because I'm bound to ignore it. So send me an invite and add a note, and I'm happy to actually continue the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that's something that is missing often. So thank you very much. And yeah, absolute pleasure to chat, and look forward to keeping in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ben, for having me. And it was a huge pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.